Let's all go to the lobby. Yes, indeed. It's time to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Good day, Mr. Adams.
And a good day to you too, sir.
Welcome, welcome. Yeah, we were just chatting in the break. You had a wonderful Easter.
I did. It was nice. Went down to my in-law's house, brought my mom down, and we had a nice ham.
Oh, very nice. Gary had ham.
Well, what else are you going to do? It's Easter, man. Like, and you have ham, because ham is delicious.
Yes.
I love ham.
Yes.
I didn't go ham. We had bacon. We had bacon with bacon and eggs.
And really, I mean, what is bacon except crispy ham?
Right. As long as you're eating some pig, it's yes. A good day.
Amen to that.
And, oh my goodness, what a fun time we had on Friday night. Yeah, Carrie was there along with the family, but what a great time and what an amazing crowd for our focus group 10th anniversary show. Didn't those people have better things to do Friday night?
You think so, right? But
yeah.
Apparently not. No, it was wonderful. It was nice to get out there and have the house be just about as crowded as the stage was, and that was really nice.
Yeah, we had a lot of people.
There were a lot
stage.
Of people up there. There were a lot of people in the house. Like I was telling folks, we had just over 100 for our audience, which was pretty great.
Well, yeah, there's not much more room than that.
Yeah, no, there wasn't a whole lot of other places for us to put people, so it was good. But yeah, we had a really good time. Show went a little longer than usual, but that's to be expected when there's 45 people on stage. I think everyone involved had a good time, whether we were performing or watching or somewhere in between.
And the Hulk even made a comeback appearance, which was great.
Yeah. I took a swing, but our good friend Anthony Severance wasn't quite ready to answer the bell.
No. Jen Shepherd stepped up, though.
Yep.
I was very happy. Maybe my biggest laugh was your correction of Rich on David Bruce.
I know
not a complete correction, but his television viewing was exposing himself.
He's a television Hulk. Right. I'm a comic book Hulk.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why we bring them both together.
And I felt badly for a moment because I didn't read a lot of comic books as a kid. He was David Banner to me. And then Alan said, no, David, but his full name is David Bruce Banner.
My wife looked at me like I was crazy when I laughed so hard.
Friggin' geeks.
That joke was for me.
Hey, man, I know my people.
Yeah, there you go. But that was a whole lot of fun.
It was great.
Let's do that again in 10 years.
Yeah, why not?
All right. Let's talk movies. You saw two this weekend. I want to start with Don Quixote because, we've been waiting, years for this to come out?
25 years.
Good
is what
Lord.
That's what the title card basically explains to
us
while we're watching it. It's for anyone who's interested, it's actually available on video on demand. It did get a limited theatrical release, but they moved straight to the VOD because of, for a number of reasons, not least of which being writer-director Terry Gilliam's ongoing legal battles with one of the former producers that greatly curtailed their ability to go into any sort of wide release. They had theatrical releases in a few European countries, but as far as American screens were concerned, it was just limited release and then get it out there and hope for the best. But like you said, it's remarkable that the movie exists at all. I mean, making a movie anyway is a difficult, daunting sort of task. Making a sort of big budget kind of movie, doubly so. But then when you take and introduce into the equation the fact that you have a notoriously finicky filmmaker in Terry Gilliam who has this lifelong passion project. He started working on this script back in 1989. Is when he first started working.
So was
on this.
That even before Fisher King?
Yeah, it's basically like in that sort of immediately post Time Bandits, like Brazil kind of, like when he was really just weirding it up. it first started the production process in 1998. So it took him basically 10 years to just get financing. And the people who have been involved with this production over the years is the list of names is staggering. You've got folks like Johnny Depp and Ewan McGregor and Robin Williams. You've got folks like like John Hurt and not one but two former cohorts of Gilliam's and Monty Python and John Cleese and Michael Palin. Like, you've got all these people who have been involved in various iterations because it's been such a weird stop and start process that's been marked by financial issues and casting concerns, injuries, natural disasters. Like, there was flooding that drastically altered the schedule at one point. Like, it's one of those projects that feels like, you know, you hesitate to use a term like cursed because that's, you know, sort of supernatural nonsense. But then you read the timeline of the making of this movie and you're like, oh man, maybe there's something to that. But he got it. He made the movie. While it's not probably necessarily the movie that he totally envisioned when he first started this down this, you know, quarter century long road, it's still pretty good. And it's very much a Terry Gilliam movie. Like, it's very clear that this is the same guy who gave you movies like Brazil and The Fisher King and 12 Monkeys and just this wonderful... you know, there are a few filmmakers who blur the lines between fantasy and reality like he does. And this, you know, and obviously anything based around, you know, the story of Don Quixote, like that, the ability to do that blurring is vital,
right,
to being able to tell the story. So the film itself, it stars Adam Driver as a director named Toby. He directs commercials. And so he's in Spain working on a campaign for an energy company, specifically a clean energy company. And so windmills, like Don Quixote, like that's his whole concept. And so he's got this whole thing set up. He's working for a company, and his boss, who's credited as simply the boss, played by Stellan Skarsgård, has the utmost faith in him, but Toby's starting to question whether or not his concept is workable. He's having doubts about whether he should even be here in the first place. And he, during a meeting in one of the local cantinas, he encounters someone selling bootleg DVDs and winds up in his hands a copy of a student film that he had made 10 years prior, which, coincidentally enough, he had filmed in a village nearby. Even more coincidentally, it was a version of the story of Don Quixote. And so he watches it and is, you know, reminded of his experience and some of the people who were involved in the process with him, including the Spanish cobbler named Javier, played by Jonathan Pryce, who he hired to play Don Quixote. In another aspect of the plot, you've got he winds up in a compromising position, let's say, with the boss's wife. And so that leads to some more sort of chaos and shenanigans. Law enforcement winds up getting involved for reasons that, you know, will become clear upon watching the movie. But law enforcement is also involved because of Toby's encounter with Javier when he goes back to the village, because turns out, ever since the movie was filmed, Javier believes himself to be Don Quixote. And so he spent the last 10 years like in this weird like trailer with a you know, a bedsheet screen set up to the film in a constant loop and him, you know, basically being Don Quixote. And it's all well and good until Toby is taken into custody by law enforcement for questioning. They take a shortcut to get out through around some traffic in the city, and once you know it, who shows up? It's Don Quixote, you know, in his armor and with his lance astride his trusty steed, and he's come for Toby because he's pretty sure that Toby is actually Sancho Panza. What follows is one of the weirdest movies I've seen in a while, because it's this constant shift, because, you know, Toby winds up going along and getting sort of swept up in you know, in this sort of grand delusion that Javier has, and so they're venturing back and forth across the Spanish countryside, you know, in search of adventure, as a good knight errant does. And the shifts between what we see with the reality that we see through Toby's eyes and the reality that we see through Don Quixote's eyes, that shift happens very seamlessly, like, and without a lot of rhyme or reason. So you're never quite sure in which level of reality you're currently operating as you're watching the movie, which, if you're someone who's not particularly familiar with either the story of Don Quixote or the sort of filmography of Terry Gilliam, might prove to be a little confusing,
mm-hmm.
A little unsettling. But if you're a fan of both, as someone like I am, I loved it. Like, I loved just experiencing this movie because it's, you know, there's weirdly opulent scenes and, you know, some a number of, like, sort of aesthetic choices that are so clearly based in Gilliam's sort of auteur weirdness, the sort of bouncing back and forth between fiction and reality and sort of, you know, bringing the two together, breaking the fourth wall, like all these wonderful choices that when all thrown together, it's a little messy. There's a sort of shagginess to the whole situation that some might find a little off-putting. But, you know, for me, like, that's a feature, not a bug. Like, that's the sort of filmmaking I expect from someone like Gilliam. And the fact that he's finally able to put this in the rear view is such a huge thing because, again, like, you know, it started filming in 2000 and then 2002. And that's in 2002 is when we got the documentary that was supposed to be the making of and turned out to be a standalone feature because the movie never got made. And then, you know, 2007 and 2013 and just all these various attempts, you know, false starts at trying to make this movie happen. And so it finally exists. And that's such a great thing. Now, Driver's fantastic. Like, he's... and we've talked about him a couple, like, he's tremendously talented, and this is a wonderful choice for him. Like, he does a wonderful job at sort of grounding the character in such a way that you buy it regardless of you know, what sort of reality he's existing in. Jonathan Pryce is phenomenal. Like, he's such a great choice for this part. He has there's a wonderful sort of combination of charisma and naivete that he brings to the proceedings that's just so fun to watch. And the rest of the ensemble is great too, but it's really, I mean, the movie's really about these two and the relationship they have. It's a little on the long side. It's like 132 minutes, give or take, and it meanders a little bit in places. But again, that's kind of the nature of the story. And so when you add all those pieces together, what you get is what I'm sure is an imperfect realization of Gilliam's vision. But the fact that it was realized at all is, I think we have to take that as a win.
Worth the wait.
Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome. Alan Adams here on Downtown to the other end of the spectrum, from Don Quixote to Penguins.
That's right. Disney Nature released their latest nature documentary called Penguins. And it's not the most challenging piece of cinema that you're gonna come across.
It's Penguins.
Yes. It's narrated by Ed Helms, one of the great things about it is it takes all of this beautiful nature footage that was shot over a period of like 3 years that they spent in the Antarctic trying to bring together this movie. So it's filming Adélie penguins, particular kind of penguin. And it's the story of...
Is it the kind what looks like they're wearing a tuxedo?
Yes, it's one of those kinds.
Beautiful.
But the story, such as it is about a penguin named Steve. Steve the penguin, who is making his first journey to his sort of ancestral mating grounds to try to find a mate and raise a family and, begin the cycle of life, etc. And so we get to watch his journey as he makes his way to the breeding ground, where he finds picks out a spot and builds a nest and attracts a mate. They lay eggs, they, warm the eggs, they hatch, you have chicks, you get to watch as he and his mate sort of raise up these chicks in an effort to get them ready for to go out to sea before the sea ice closes back up and they're trapped. They have to get out to the open ocean before that happens. Meanwhile, you're dealing with environmental terrors, predators, all of that stuff. And it's all coming together in a way to sort of illustrate the sort of story of how you know, this the cycle goes with these particular types of penguins. It's really pretty fun. Like, Helms is great. Like, he does a great job of both sort of you know, sort of God's eye narration, as well as sort of giving us a sort of anthropomorphized version of Steve's inner monologue. So Steve, like, becomes a character, and, you know, with a lot of narrators, including people who have narrated previous Disney Nature outings, that's not necessarily going to work. But Ed Helms, like, you could, it's like, oh yeah, no, that dude, that dude could totally be a penguin. Like, that's, but he has that sort of you know, guileless kind of goofiness, right, that that really sort of lends itself to this kind of storytelling. But really, the star of the show is the filmmaking, the footage. It's shockingly beautiful at times. Like, just, you know, this, these wonderful portraits of just how, you know, bleak and you know, the bleak tundra, and like thousands of penguins descending on this one spot. We get to see them, like, you know, moving back and forth across the ice, interacting with one another, interacting with their environment. And we get to see some pretty shockingly you know, it's almost scary moments involving some of the predatory animals in the area. And yeah, all
what's the biggest threat to the penguins?
Well, it's there are there's a type of bird that's
you Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie is the biggest threat. there's a type of bird that basically attacks their eggs and nests while they're waiting. But there are like elephant seals are a big predator. But killer whales are the big one, because the whales are in constant search of passage to their feeding grounds. And it's they're almost, the seals are in some ways almost collateral damage, because that's not necessarily what the whales are seeking to eat. I'm sorry, the penguins. But yeah, they're in the way. And so that's, you know, things get kind of violent under, especially underneath the ice, which, by the way, there's some of the best underwater, like, filmography, like, videography I think I've ever seen in this movie. Like, wow. Some of those shots are just beautiful. And you get to watch these animals as they move through through the environment. I have no idea how the filmmakers removed themselves from the process in such a way as to kind of allow things to unfold in a natural manner. Whatever they did, it was phenomenal. Because,
penguin cam?
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, you've got like GoPros and, but, you know, like the underwater stuff. And sometimes just setting up cameras, like basically like sussing out the logistics, figuring out, you know, the best possible, like, you know, area, and just setting up a camera and hoping. And that's right. Why, and that's why, you know, it takes 3 years to get enough footage to make a movie that's ultimately, like, you know, an hour and 15 minutes long. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a very long movie. But it's, I think, a little bit more, like, entertaining. It's not really the right word, but, like, as far as, like, kids are concerned, like, the sort of Helms narration, I think, goes a long way towards sort of allowing the storytelling and the more documentary aspects of the film to coexist in a way that's going to make it really engaging for little kids, you know, for older kids, and for adults too. Like, there's so a lot of fun to be
had. Nothing
too
scary for the little kids.
There are a couple of moments where we're left with some doubt with regards to the fate of certain beloved penguins. Oh. But I will say, at the risk of spoilers, things work out okay for most of our heroes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Do they touch on environmental changes at all, or is it just mostly? I mean, I was half jokingly, but really the biggest threat to a lot of the penguin population is human effect on the climate and whaling and the depreciation of the fish stock.
Sure.
In Antarctica, all of that stuff is a big threat to all of those animals.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's, I mean, I think that's a good point. It doesn't really get addressed. Like, it's, I mean, the reality is, it's, you know, it's not that kind of movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the folks at Disney Nature are necessarily interested. Yeah, like, it's, they're not necessarily looking to engage on that level. I don't think. which is, you know, too bad. Like, there are a few companies out there that have that sort of platform. I get it. Like, I understand, especially when you're trying to make a movie that's ostensibly, like, for little kids. Like, you don't necessarily need to be talking about the rigors and horrors of climate change. But it would have been nice to have some sort of acknowledgement, even just a small one. But, like I said, I understand why it's not there.
Well, it sounds good. Both of them sound like movies we'd like to see.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think you, in particular, would enjoy the Man Who Killed Don Quixote. And I think the whole family would enjoy Disney Nature Penguins, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge, talking movies, past the popcorn, every Monday afternoon.